for a little ride.
Now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk.
Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics, or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted, and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
Now that's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
You just have to see it to believe it. Best-selling author L.A. Marzulli just returned from a top-secret trip to Peru, where he returned with color photographs and physical evidence of an ancient race of hybrid giants, many standing over 10 feet tall. Marzulli crawled through the jungles of Peru, exploring hidden caves and private museums. He photographed the skulls and the skeletons, returning with a book that will change your worldview. On the Trail of the Nephilim is his explosive new book, chock full of 120 color photographs of the gigantic skulls and the skeletons and the megalithic monuments these giants built. The companion DVD, Watchers 6, documents Marzulli's trip, exposing the massive cover-up for all to see. The book is $29.95. The DVD is $19.95. Get them both for $39.95, a $10 discount. I guarantee you, you've never seen anything quite like this before. A picture is worth a thousand words. Go to lamarzulli.net to order now. lamarzulli.net. That's www.lamarzulli.net.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, hello America, welcome to another edition of Jim Paris Live. Good to be with you. We are pre-recording this week's show, so we won't be able to take callers, and that is to accommodate our special guest that will be joining us momentarily. His name is Nick J. Tate, and he's author of the Obamacare Survival Guide. I'm sure you've seen this book at your bookstore. There's been a lot of advertising for this book, and with everything that's going on right now with the computers crashing and the exchanges not opening as planned, we thought this would be a great opportunity to bring Nick Tate with us on the program to talk about the Obamacare Survival Guide, and he'll be joining us momentarily. A lot of things happening here at ChristianMoney.com, and by the way, that is our main website if you're a new listener to the program. Of course, my brand new book came out 2 weeks ago, and it's called Exposing the Ponzi Masters, and it's doing very well over at Amazon.com. We released this one exclusively as an ebook. So it's available strictly as an ebook, and you can read it on your Kindle device, or a lot of people don't know this, you don't need a Kindle to read Kindle books. There is a free app that you can get over at Amazon that will allow you to read Kindle books on your desktop, your laptop, your phone, your iPad or tablet. You know, just about any computer can now be used to read Kindle books. So again, the name of the book is Exposing the Ponzi Masters. And that's available exclusively as a Kindle book over at Amazon.com. And Bob Yetman and I will be releasing another new book. This will be coming out in November, on November the 22nd, which is the 50th anniversary of the assassination, sadly to say, of John F. Kennedy. And Bob and I have a book coming out on the topic of the Kennedy assassination. This book will also be exclusively released as a Kindle ebook that'll be coming out in November. Interesting news this week, Bitcoin, which we haven't talked about Bitcoin on the show in quite a while. Bitcoin surging above $200, $200 this week. And that really comes as no big coincidence because the dollar has hit a two-year low. And what we have found historically is when the dollar gets weak, Bitcoin gets strong. People look at Bitcoin as an alternative to the U.S. dollar. In fact, an alternative to a lot of mainstream currencies. If you remember back a few months ago when the small country of Cyprus, which is a member of the European Union, when their economy collapsed, many millions of dollars was moved out of the euro into bitcoins. But currently, Bitcoin over $200 this week. And a couple of things happening with Bitcoin if you follow Bitcoin closely. Number one is a guy out of Canada is releasing, I guess, in the coming weeks, a Bitcoin ATM that is supposed to be very, very well funded that will make converting Bitcoins into dollars and dollars back into Bitcoins very, very easy. Just as easy as using an ATM machine. So Bitcoin ATMs are a reality, and they're coming here soon. And also in the news today, a couple of interesting stories. Of course, if you haven't been following what's been happening with the NSA news, the U.S. spying news, more information released from Edward Snowden suggests that the U.S. has been spying not only on its own citizens, but also listening to phone calls of European leaders. And this is in the news right now that Germany and France are asking the U.S. for a no-spy agreement. Imagine needing that. I mean, really think about this. I mean, let's say that your neighbor was spying on you and you had to go out in your driveway and have an agreement signed that you wouldn't spy on each other anymore. Kind of awkward. But that's happening. And also in the news today, fascinating, the JonBenet Ramsey story is back in the news. Just when you thought you had heard it all, the indictments. If you remember back to 1999, the parents of JonBenet Ramsey were actually suspects. Not just suspects, but they were actually indicted and almost faced charges, almost went to trial for the death of their child. And the actual indictments are available now. They were just released today. Of course, if you're listening to us when this is live, this is being rebroadcast on Sunday night, our regular time slot. We're pre-recording this one on Friday. But if you want to read that, I'm sure this will be big news on all of those legal talk shows, Geraldo, Nancy Grace, Headline News, all of that. The actual indictments of JonBenet Ramsey's parents, the grand jury indictments, are now available to read the details. And that's going to just bring this whole case back up again. Never solved. There were quite a lot of questions of the parents, quite a few suspects. There have been, I don't know how many books written, probably dozens of books written on this. But if you're interested at all in that case, the grand jury indictments have now been released. I guess they wait a few years on things like that. You know, a grand jury testimony is usually considered very private, very secret. But now that information is being made public today. All right, our guest today is Nick Tate, and the name of the book is The Obamacare Survival Guide. I'm sure you've seen the ads for this book on television. It's in all your bookstores. It's being promoted on Newsmax as well. And Nick Tate joins us to talk about the book, The Obamacare Survival Guide. Mr. Tate, good to have you with us today. There we go. All right, we got you now. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thanks. Good to be with you today.
Yes. Hey, well, let's start. I want to get into the whole book, but let's start with what's happening right now. We thought it would be interesting to have you on, and we've been trying to, work out a booking now for a few weeks, but wanted to have you on, just in general. But it's great timing to ask you about everything that's happening with the so-called health insurance exchanges. And, of course, there was some explosive testimony on Capitol Hill this week where the people that created the software basically admitted in Senate testimony that they never tested it, that they just, in essence, put it out there. And I think everyone is shocked at just how badly things are going. What are your early thoughts on the website and the health insurance exchanges?
Well, you know, there have been warnings for months by pretty high-level officials at Treasury and the General Accounting Office that there wasn't going to be time to test these systems before we go live, and there were lots of predictions that just the sheer volume of people logging on were going to likely crash those systems in the early days. So there were some advance warnings. It surprises me to hear some of the administration folks saying they had no idea that it was going to happen, when I remember reading and writing some of those reports in June and July and August that predicted that there were going to be these massive tech problems. But I think the truth is that they're far worse than what the predictions indicated they were going to be. And the question now is for the very first step of the biggest major component of Obamacare has obviously been a misstep. And what's that going to mean long term in terms of not only the politics, because it certainly gives ammunition to critics who say the system is huge and unworkable and complicated and really is going to be a problem, but it also causes enormous practical and logistical problems, not just for people trying to sign up, but for the subsidy programs, for the insurance companies that are going to have to figure out how they're going to provide coverage for folks. And I don't think this is going to be a problem we're going to be solving in just the next couple of weeks. It's at least my prediction.
Now, for people who have been following, you know, this in the news, you really can't ignore it. It's probably one of the biggest stories of the last 10 years, the whole idea of this Obamacare implementation, the Affordable Care Act. A lot of people have looked at this as kind of a distant issue that they don't really have to think about. It's coming, you know, in a few years down the road. But the reality is, you know, talking to you now, you know, fall of October 13, this is here. And people can't ignore it, because starting next year, isn't that right, they will have to pay a fine if they don't have an acceptable insurance policy in place.
That's exactly right. I mean, as recently as August and September, there were polls showing that somewhere between 4 and 6 out of every 10 Americans didn't even know that Obamacare was the law of the land, much less what their requirements are going to be, and that if they don't have insurance through an employer or Medicare or Medicaid, they're going to have to buy it on their own through these exchanges or pay a fine. So that you're absolutely right. You know, the future is now. It's not some point in the months ahead. It's right now. And the message of the book is really to make sure that you're getting informed, become a savvy consumer. There are some programs you can take advantage of and benefit from financially and from a health perspective, but you got to know what they are. You also have to know what the potential financial hits might be that you will take if you don't become a savvy consumer. I understand that health care and health insurance is a tough issue for a lot of folks. It's very complicated, but the time when we could just simply do what our doctors told us to do or what our insurance companies said we should do or would cover, those days are long gone. We're not in the Marcus Welby era any longer. We really need to be savvy consumers when it comes to health care, and it's no longer an option. It just has to happen.
So if I understand this correctly, and correct me if I'm wrong, because a lot of this is going to be me making statements and then having you correct me here today. Okay, so January 1st is, in theory, when you could actually have coverage in force under Obamacare. But what's going on right now is like the enrollment period, because you don't get insurance overnight. I mean, any kind of insurance, there is a process you have to go through. So the people that are applying now are doing so with an eye towards January, when they would actually get the coverage. And this 2 or 3 month window kind of represents, you know, that period of time where maybe they do the underwriting and the processing and determine what your rate is and have you signing all the paperwork and all of that kind of thing. Am I understanding that part of it right?
You have it exactly right. There really are 4 dates that you need to keep in mind. You have to have a coverage plan. You have to pick a health plan by December 15 of this year for coverage to begin on January 1st. So December 15 is the deadline for picking a plan. That coverage begins January 1st. And the third date I'll mention is March 31st of 2014. If you have not picked a plan by March 31st of 2014, that's when you will start to pay the fine for not having health insurance. So the way the law is written, there are those deadlines. But you're exactly right. If you wait until early March to sign up for a plan and pick a plan, you will not get coverage for at least several weeks and possibly a month or longer, at least as health insurance policies now work. But let me asterisk this and point out that these problems with the website and these problems with the healthcare exchanges suggest to me that what's going to happen is they're going to have to fix those problems, and then people are going to need to sign up, and there could still be some downstream effects of the delays. It may take insurers longer to confirm who's signing up for their plans, what kinds of federal subsidies are they going to be getting from the federal government to defray those plans, the cost of those plans, and will that in some ways push back when you will actually be covered and get your reimbursements from the federal government. So the delays are not just sort of paperwork technical delays. They really do have some significant practical applications and implications for people getting their insurance on time.
Now, I've heard both ends of the spectrum on this. One opinion is that this is going to be just a bonanza for the insurance companies, that now that the government is forcing everyone to have health insurance, that and they're providing these subsidies, that this is just a financial bonanza for the insurance companies to cash in. The other side of it is we don't really see a lot of insurance companies rushing to become involved in this health insurance exchange. In fact, in some states, we're hearing that there's only like a couple of companies that are offering coverage, which really defeats the whole idea of having like this supermarket, if you will, of opportunities to comparison shop, et cetera, et cetera. Imagine if there was only like one or two airlines. You wouldn't really need to go to Expedia anymore if there was really only one or two options anyway. Which side of this are we on? I mean, is it a financial heyday for the insurance companies? And if so, why are we seeing so few companies on some of these exchanges?
Well, there it's a multi-part answer to your multi-part question. The truth is that what you're really talking about and what you're speaking to is the enormous complexity of the healthcare marketplace in this country. The markets in California are different from the markets in New York and New Jersey and Ohio and Florida. So number one, the big picture is that insurers clearly stand to benefit from a law that requires everyone to basically buy their product, insurance. Everyone in the country will have to do it. There are 45 million Americans that don't have insurance. So Obamacare delivers to the doors of insurance companies tens of millions of new paying customers. That's good news for them. On the other side, balancing that benefit, though, is the reality that those insurance companies have to meet new standards. They have to insure people who don't have insure people who have pre-existing conditions, who they could deny before and who frankly cost a lot more than people who are healthy. They have to provide 10 essential health benefits as part of their plans that are set by the federal government on pediatrics and maternity care and prescription drugs and seven other specific designations. So they do have to hit some new standards. The third layer of complication is that in some states, like California and Maryland, they have tougher standards beyond the federal standards that they set for those insurers. So what we found in California is a number of major providers, major insurance companies said, you know what, we're not going to play on your health care exchange. We're not going to offer plans on your health care exchange. In Maryland, state insurance officials went back to, I'm not going to name the insurance company because I'm not absolutely certain which one it was. It was one of the big ones. They said, we want you to lower your rates across the board by 29%. And the insurance company said, no. We're just going to simply pull out of the state of Maryland's insurance exchange. So what we're really seeing is the big picture is insurance companies stood to gain and will stand to gain. The downside is for them is they're going to have to hit some new standards at the state and federal level, and that's why you're seeing in some states there will only be a few number of options or far fewer options. Some states you'll have hundreds of choices, things to choose between. In other states it will be far fewer than that.
For those of you just tuning in, we are pre-recorded tonight. We normally do the show live on Sunday nights. We're doing this recording on a Friday afternoon here just before the weekend. And my guest is Nick Tate. The name of the book is Obamacare Survival Guide. You've seen this book. It's in all the bookstores. It's being promoted by Newsmax. You've seen it on TV. a great book to have if you're somebody that's just trying to figure this all out. And the reality is you don't really have much time to figure this out. You've got to really get this now. So you need to get a copy of this book, and you can get it. I've seen it on Amazon. It's in all the bookstores. The website is humanixbooks.com, and that's H-U-M-A-N-I-X, humanixbooks.com. Or you can just Google it, Obamacare Survival Guide, tons of places to get it. Let me ask you, Nick, about the pre-existing conditions. You know, as a Christian, I'm a little bit torn because on the one hand, you know, there's sort of that merciful part of me that says, hey, we should have something for people that have pre-existing conditions. And there's so many people that contact our website who are in that situation, whether it's a parent with a situation or even a child that has a pre-existing condition, and then they change jobs. Of course, in this economy, you can't always prevent that from happening. And all of a sudden, they're in a situation now where they don't really have coverage. But I'm hearing stories that as much as that's one of the silver linings of this whole deal, that may not be all that it's cracked up to be. For example, a few weeks ago, there were some stories later considered to be rumors that insurance companies were denying people that had serious pre-existing conditions by using other excuses, for example, saying that maybe they had bad credit or didn't have enough didn't have a bank account open. They came up with reasons to turn them away, even though they couldn't say it was for the pre-existing condition. They found another reason to turn them down. Is it your feeling that those with pre-existing conditions will really and truly be able to grab this holy grail of insurance, full coverage at the same rate as everybody else in their region of the country in their age if they have a pre-existing condition?
I think this is one of those good news, bad news stories of Obamacare, and I just want to say, you know, from the outset, I'm trying in the book and in my comments not to take sides and not to play politics, but really just to say what the truth of the matter is. The truth of the matter is there are going to be those insurance denials in some cases, and, you know, I will also say that not every company does the right thing all the time, and sometimes they may even be doing things that are illegal under the law by denying that kind of coverage. But as written, the law does require insurers to provide coverage for people with pre-existing conditions. That's about 129 million Americans, adults. There's about 17 million children with pre-existing conditions. So do the math, that's about half the country. So virtually every family is touched in some way by heart disease, cancer, diabetes, or another pre-existing condition. And the law does require insurers to cover those individuals, not just charge them, not just deny them. Insurers cannot charge more insurance rates for those individuals, and there are no longer annual or lifetime caps of coverage. So as written, the law says, if I have cancer and my cancer coverage costs, treatment costs millions of dollars, there's no limit that the insurance company can place on me if I have insurance through that company. The thing to balance that benefit with is the reality that for people who are healthy, who may not need that kind of care, are certainly going to pay more for their insurance and premiums, and we are all going to pay a little more in taxes to cover the cost of this benefit because, of course, this health care plan is not free. And like any other kind of insurance, you have home insurance, property insurance, car insurance, you pay into it with the hope that you'll never need to go back to that insurance company and say, my house burned down, my car was totaled. But your funds, your payments, your premiums go to fund those individuals whose homes do burn down and whose cars are totaled. The same principle applies here with health insurance, which is to say, as written, the law says people with pre-existing conditions are protected, but as in any other commercial enterprise, there are going to be those bad actors and those folks who get abreast of the law and sidestep what is required. So, you know, my prediction is we're going to see some of that happening, and, you know, that's why it's really important to be a savvy consumer and know what your rights are so you can challenge it if your insurer says, you know what, we're not going to cover this for you because you don't have a bank account or maybe you made a mistake in your application to us and made a little minor error. But as written, I do believe it's one of the key benefits of the law that people with pre-existing conditions will be winners.
Now, one of the questions we're getting hit with a lot from people is the cost of a typical health insurance plan. And what we were told was that this was going to make insurance affordable, and it's called the Affordable Care Act. But we're hearing anecdotal stories from around the country of people reporting that they're going to be paying multiples of what they expected, and even stories from people who are saying that the insurance that they currently have through their employer that they like and they enjoy the coverage and it's working out great, that just in the last year or two, the cost has begun to go up dramatically. And so we're not really hearing many stories of people saying, hey, I got in and I got a really low-cost plan and I'm going to save money. It seems from all fronts we're hearing stories of not just slight increases but dramatic increases. In my own family situation, my wife is a teacher, and as a family, we were a part of her insurance plan, Nick, but we recently joined something called Christian Medical Sharing, which allows for people to opt out of Obamacare. It actually qualifies in lieu of an insurance plan, so we won't be subject to the fine. But my wife stayed on her school plan, but myself and our kids, we moved over into this Christian Medical Sharing concept because we were looking at an increase of like 50 or 60% in her premiums just from like 2 years ago. So what are your thoughts on the cost on this? Is it just going to be a lot more expensive than anybody thought, including President Obama, or is in time will things settle out and the prices will come back down to where they were before or maybe even below that?
I think the short answer to the question is that health care costs and health care premiums are going to continue to rise. I mean, you will see in the news, you will see projections and predictions all over the map. HHS, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which is implementing Obamacare, recently came out with a report that said that when they looked across the country, what they found is the premiums for plans that are being offered on these new healthcare exchanges are about 16% lower than what they were projecting those plans would be. Now, what they didn't clarify is they were only looking at those states where New York, New Jersey, that are particular markets where the market forces were likely to lead to that kind of competition that would drive those costs down. On the other side, you've heard critics suggesting that in places like Ohio, healthcare costs have been going up. Forbes reported recently that for young people, people under the age of 30, healthcare premiums were likely to double and may even triple or quadruple for young folks compared to what they would now pay. So, you know, the projections are all over the map, but I think most reasonable folks who look at the numbers and are not interested in a political point of view will tell you that cost increases are going to continue for at least the next decade. And that's because there are no price controls in Obamacare, and there's nothing that prevents insurers from passing on those increasing costs for health care to consumers and companies in the form of premiums. Now, HHS, one of the HHS agencies that is responsible for implementing Obamacare, actually came out with a report last week that looked at the numbers and tried to play it down the middle. And what they were suggesting is that in the next year or two, healthcare cost increases are going to go up about 4% every year. And after then, they're going to max out at about 6% every year. And that's to cover the increasing costs of people who are getting coverage through Obamacare, as well as the greater numbers of people who are going to be on Medicare, the program for seniors, and Medicaid, the program for the poor. So it's my judgment. There are deals to be had. If you have a pre-existing condition, if you're older, the chances are that your premiums will be better. If you're younger and healthier, chances are your premiums are going to be higher than what they've been today, but it really will vary state to state, person to person, depending on your income, where you live, your age, and what kind of a plan you buy. So I'm afraid I don't want people's eyes to glaze over as they're listening to all the qualifications and the numbers, and I'm getting lost in the weeds here, but you know, the summary here is the big picture is that healthcare costs are not going to be coming down in any significant way in the next 10 years because this is not a free healthcare program. It costs a lot to provide the provisions and the protections that Obamacare calls for. And the debate is whether those costs outweigh the benefits, and that's a question that is really up to lawmakers and individuals to decide for themselves.
For those just tuning in, the name of the book is Obamacare Survival Guide. and highly recommend it. If you're looking for something simple to read to get an overview of this new program that's really going to change all of our lives one way or the other, even if you already have employer-provided insurance, you're going to be affected by this. You need to get a copy of this book. Nick, what some people are saying is that, especially younger folks, what would prevent them from, say, taking the position that, well, I'll just not join into an Obamacare plan. I'll just basically wait until after I get sick, after I need this coverage. And my understanding is that, especially in the beginning, the fines are not going to be that significant. And in order to get this politically, you know, passed, you know, through the Senate and the House, they had to even water it down to where it's a fine, but it won't really be collected in the way that the IRS normally collects, you know, overdue taxes and those other sorts of fines. So I wonder what your thoughts are on that theory that there could be some large group of younger people that just say, well, if I need it, I'll buy it after the fact. And it sounds crazy that, like Mark Levin says, it's like buying homeowner's insurance the day after your house burns down. But you really could do that in this particular case. Isn't that right?
That's absolutely right. And you are correct. The fines are very cheap. I mean, for next year, it's $95 per year or $285 per family if you don't buy insurance. And that scales up to about $695 per individual and just over $2,000 per family in 2016. So, you know, you could take the position that I'm not going to buy this product until I need it. And then when I need it, there's nothing in the law that prevents me from buying it. So if I'm in a car accident or I develop cancer, diabetes, heart disease at some point, then I will pick up insurance, and there is indeed nothing in the law that prevents that from happening. The bigger picture, really, there are two considerations. I mean, like any other kind of insurance, whatever age you are, wherever you are in life, whatever your income, you have to decide whether you think the benefits or insurance are better than the risk of not having it. People can go bare if they want to in their property insurance and not pay a thing, and, you know, hopefully the house will never burn down and they'll never need it. But the question is, what happens if they do? With health insurance, that's one calculation you need to make. What is it worth it to you? There are also a series of things to consider. If you're low income or moderate income, you may qualify for Medicaid. You may qualify for a federal subsidy that will offset the cost of that care, so it may be worth your while to consider it. The bigger picture is if many, many millions of people decide that they're just going to simply pay the fine and not buy the insurance, then the books for Obamacare will not balance. If the number, I think, is seven million individuals that would need to buy insurance in the first year of Obamacare to balance the books and pay for all of the other benefits that we've talked about. If that doesn't happen, if more people than that decide that they're not going to buy insurance and they're simply going to pay the fine, the likelihood is that will have a ripple effect on both health care costs and health premium costs for the rest of us that are paying into the system, and that's the real concern. On paper, these numbers work out, but if in fact the reality is that more people decide I'm just going to pay the fine and wait until I need insurance to buy it, then it could mean that insurance rates are going to go up for the rest of us, and that's one of the things we're going to be watching in the next year or two to see what happens.
Our guest is Nick Tate. The name of the book is Obamacare Survival Guide. Nick, we have a four-minute break here, so you can stretch your legs, get a cup of coffee. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about how this affects Medicare. We're going to talk about the subsidies. And, you know, maybe you can get a subsidy. We'll talk a little bit about that. We're also going to talk about medical professionals. You know, if you're in a medical field, you're a doctor, you're a nurse, you're a medical technician, you work at a hospital, what does the future look like for you? Is this good news for you that more people are going to be insured and this whole Obamacare revolution? Will this help you or hurt you? We're also going to talk about the a small business mandate, you know, those that own a business, and how this will affect you down the road in terms of the mandate for you to provide coverage to your employees. All of that and more after we come back from this break. My guest, Nick Tate, the book Obamacare Survival Guide. We'll be back in 4 minutes. Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website christianmoney.com. Recently, I did an event in Chicago unveiling a brand new service called Christian Money Plus. It's been years in the making, and I'm super excited to let you know that it is now available. At the centerpiece of this new program is the ability for you to have unlimited access to me personally using the internet. You'll also receive my 12-page newsletter mailed to your home each and every month. Now, there are tons of other benefits, such as our suite of financial calculators, model portfolios, and much, much more. Right now, I'm offering several bonuses to our new subscribers. Some of these bonuses include a video on how to use the internet to raise money for your idea or project. This is money you will never have to pay back. There's also a second video on how to save money by dropping cable TV, and I also cover on this video how to get free home phone service for life. Yes, you can drop cable TV and still get hundreds of channels on your television set legally using the internet. All of that, including how to get the free home phone service for life, all of that on your second bonus video. Additional bonus reports include how to opt out of Obamacare, as I did, and save thousands by joining what's called Christian Medical Sharing. Another bonus report shows you step-by-step how to stop Google from spying on you. All of this information is available right now to subscribers of our brand new service, Christian Money Plus. I sure hope you'll consider joining us. All of the money that comes in every month from Christian Money Plus goes to further the mission of our website, christianmoney.com. Check it out today. That's christianmoneyplus.com. Again, that's christianmoneyplus.com. You can subscribe right now and access all of these bonus reports within a matter of just a few seconds. Check it out right now. That's christianmoneyplus.com.
You just have to see it to believe it. Best-selling author L.A. Marzulli just returned from a top-secret trip to Peru, where he returned with color photographs and physical evidence of an ancient race of hybrid giants, many standing over 10 feet tall. Marzulli crawled through the jungles of Peru, exploring hidden caves and private museums. He photographed the skulls and the skeletons, returning with a book that will change your worldview. On the Trail of the Nephilim is his explosive new book, chock full of 120 color photographs of the gigantic skulls and the skeletons and the megalithic monuments these giants built. The companion DVD, Watchers 6, documents Marzulli's trip, exposing the massive cover-up for all to see. The book is $29.95. The DVD is $19.95. Get them both for $39.95, a $10 discount. I guarantee you, you've never seen anything quite like this before. A picture is worth a thousand words. Go to lamarzulli.net to order now. lamarzulli.net. That's www.lamarzulli.net.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com.
All right, welcome back, and my guest today is Nick Tate. We are pre-recording the show this week, so we're not going to be able to take any phone calls. The name of the book is Obamacare Survival Guide, and we're talking about the A to Z of Obamacare. And Nick, before the break, you were talking about the fines, and they're small in the first year. But isn't it also true that once you get about 3 or 4 years out, the fines can actually become fairly significant?
It's true. In 2016, the fine is about 2,000 almost $2,100 per year for a family and about $700 per individual. So, you know, they do rise from the low levels of $95 per year and $285 per year next year over the next 3 years. So they do kind of go up. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're adjusted in the future. We'll see.
But it's still not as much as buying the insurance. So even though the spread would be less in future years when the fines are higher, there still could be the argument made for wait until you're sick and then go to one of these plans because they're forced to take you. And in the meantime, just pay a penalty.
That's exactly right, and I suspect that there are going to be a lot of folks who make that choice and just decide to wait until they need the insurance before they buy it, and there's nothing in the law that prevents them from doing that.
Now, tell us about the individual, the mandate for businesses, that is. I understand a few weeks ago that the president signed an executive order, if I understand this correctly, which said to the business owner, you're not going to be on the same time frame as the individual. We're going to give you an additional year. And if I understand the law correctly, if you have more than 50 employees, then you're going to be required to provide them with health insurance as part of their employment. But I'm also hearing all kinds of weird stories, like people are – they own a restaurant, and they're breaking the restaurant into three separate corporations. One is the cook – the people that cook the food, another corporation, you know, the people that are the waiters and the waitresses. They're engaging in these sort of gamesmanship tactics to avoid the penalties. Tell us about the mandate for the business owner and if any of these ideas will work to get them around this 50-person limit.
There's all kinds of creative permutations that are occurring and that we're going to see in the next couple of years as employers try to figure out a way around or to game this mandate. But here's what the law says. If you have 50 or more, that is more than 49 employees, 50 or more full-time employees or full-time equivalents, you must provide health benefits beginning in 2015 or you will pay a penalty of $2,000 per worker to the IRS. Now, $2,000 per worker to the IRS may sound like a lot of money, but when you consider that it costs about $6,000 a year to insure an individual and about $16,000 a year to insure a family of four, you can see that those fines, too, are not really all that significant. And what they really do provide is an incentive for many businesses that are now paying those higher costs for employee insurance to just pay the fine and send their folks to the exchanges to buy insurance on their own. And a number of companies are already experimenting with hours and modifying schedules and trying to figure out a way to get around the system to the point of dividing companies up, as you suggest, in a restaurant that defines the cooks as one company and the wait staff as another. There is a provision of the law that says that if you are an owner, a company owner, and you run, say, three companies, three franchises, and each of those three companies is under that 50-worker benchmark, you can't count them separately if it's just got one owner. You have to add all those employees together and treat them as an aggregate, one owner, one company. So if you had, say, three Subways or three Burger King franchises, and each of them had 25 to 30 employees, you would count that, the IRS is going to count that as one owner, one company with 75 to 90 employees. So that would put you in
that
category.
They've thought a couple of steps ahead of some people, but I'm even imagining now, a guy sets up a corporation and gives like his son a 1% share. So now that's like its own unique entity. Then the next one, his daughter gets a 1% share in, and now you have a unique ownership group there. So I'm sure that as they change these rules now – So what you're saying is that in many ways, this scenario I outlined earlier where individuals could decide not to buy coverage and just pay the fine, that businesses are going to be in much the same situation where the fine represents a modest outlay of money compared to the entire cost. Is there any possibility, though, that these fines could be substantially increased over time, that we could get down the road, say, 5 or 10 years, and the fines become maybe equal to, if not worse, than the cost of the insurance? I mean, that would certainly force people to get coverage.
Anything is possible with the federal government, but, the question is, would there be the political will to do that? What I would argue, based on what we're seeing now, is Exactly the opposite is likely to happen. I think that what we might actually see is a great pressure to increase the tax benefits and the tax breaks for companies that provide insurance for their workers as opposed to more penalties. You know, Bill Clinton was tasked by the White House last month to give a presentation, a speech, to make the case for Obamacare as the Secretary of Explaining Stuff, as the president calls him. And while, you know, as you know, Bill Clinton certainly made the case and said Obamacare is a good thing, but in the content of that speech, he also said that there are problems that need to be fixed. And one of the problems that he identified is we need to figure out a way to expand the tax credits that are now offered to small companies. If you have 25 or fewer employees and you provide health benefits, you get a pretty good tax credit. You get a 50% tax credit next year, starting next year, on the premiums that you pay. And Bill Clinton was saying we need to expand that so that it's not just that amount and it's not just those companies. He also suggested that we should provide a way for individuals who decide to pass on company employer-based health plans and buy their own plan through these exchanges because they think they can get a better deal or they can save some money. We need to figure out a way to let that happen and not penalize the companies that employ those individuals. So I think, you know, what I hope happens is in the next year, as the problems, the larger problems that everyone acknowledges exist with the law as written, will be addressed and fixed. And so maybe we can figure out a way to preserve those things that people generally acknowledge are a good thing, providing affordable care, making sure people with pre-existing conditions get covered, et cetera, but also look at some of the downsides and figure out a way, can we modify the law, can we delay aspects of the law, can we underfund certain provisions of the law or not enforce certain provisions so that the things that really are acknowledged to be a problem are dropped off the edge of the table. And that's going to be the question is, with midterm elections next year, is there going to be the political will to kind of bring both sides together and say, you know, let's work this out.
Now, another issue you address in the book, Nick, is how this affects Medicare, and we only need to go back to the last presidential election. The Republicans said that the Democrats were basically stealing $800 or $900 million from Medicare to fund Obamacare, and the Democrats said, no, we're not. We're simply finding savings in Medicare to be able to, you know, reinvest those savings over into Obamacare, which will help everyone, including those in Medicare. What are your thoughts on how this is already and may in the future affect Medicare recipients?
Well, there are upsides and downsides of the impacts of Medicare from Obamacare. On the upside, in the short term, there were several sweeteners that were given to seniors through Medicare changes. The closing of the so-called donut hole in prescription drug coverage. Seniors are now getting discounts on their prescription and brand name drugs from Big Pharma, so they don't have to pay those costs. That was a benefit. Seniors now get free, essentially no cost, preventive services for things like cancer screening, colonoscopies, mammography screening, flu shots, diabetes tests, et cetera. So there were some nice things that were kind of thrown into the pot to sweeten the pot at the beginning. But down the road, over the next 10 years, Obamacare actually cuts $716 billion, with a B, from Medicare because they need that money. Well, for two things are happening. The number of people in the country who turn 65 is growing exponentially. Something like 10,000 Americans a day are going to turn 65 over the next 19 years. So there's a larger number of people who are going to qualify for Medicare, and there's a smaller pool of workers who are paying into Medicare. So there isn't the money in the coffers to pay for the program's needs. So the cuts of $716 billion are intended to reflect that financial reality. Now, what the Democrats said last year was that's not going to affect benefits, seniors don't need to worry, and I think that that is an accurate statement in the short term. But in the long term, look, you can't cut $716 billion from Medicare without it having an impact on seniors. Doctors are going to drop out and decide not to offer it because their reimbursement rates are going to go down. Certain care may not be offered everywhere you live, and you may have a hard time finding a doctor if you need a doctor for a particular kind of procedure because of the changes that are happening. And there's one other thing I should mention, and that is the creation under Obamacare of what's called the Independent Payment Advisory Board. This is an independent executive body, non-governmental body that the president appoints and the Senate approves, that is charged with seeing whether or not more cuts in Medicare are going to be needed. And the decisions of that board are basically binding, which means the president can't step in and say, I don't agree with you, we're not going to do that. And the only way that Congress could overturn the decisions of that payment advisory board are through a 3/5 supermajority. They can't get a simple majority on virtually anything in both branches of Congress today, so the likelihood that that would happen is very low. So the bottom line, that $716 billion in cuts that we know about, that may become the very bottom of the cuts that we see over the next 10 years. So, you know, my view is that as people in this country are getting older, approaching retirement age, and people on Medicare, they're going to need to be paying attention year to year to see how their benefits are going to change, because they are going to change.
You know, I don't begrudge people in the medical industry. You know, they go to school for years and years and years, and they have to, you know, to go through a lot. They've got to pay back all those school loans and everything, and they make very good money. But it's to the point now where I've got some friends in the medical industry, and it's almost like they have a license to print money. I mean, we're talking about just unbelievable lifestyles. You know, I have one friend who's a doctor, and you know, he's always going on international trips. And I mean, it's just unreal how much money that is made in the medical industry. Even people that are nurses. I have a friend who's a nurse, makes over $100,000 a year just, you know, as a nurse. And, you know, God love them. And I've even thought, if I ever change careers, man, I should get into something related to medical, because it seems like everyone I know that's in that business is just making money hand over fist. But you hear, Nick, that the gravy train is ending, that once this Obamacare deal gets fully implemented, that just like in other countries, we're going to see doctors making a lot less. We're hearing stories of some doctors saying, hey, I'll just retire early. The money that you would expect to make, you know, in professions like nursing is not going to be there like it has been historically. Is any of that true? I mean, will we see people in the medical industry affected negatively from a financial standpoint?
Absolutely. I do think that there is in addition to the demographic trend that I just mentioned, with the growing number of Americans turning 65, there's also a growing number of graying doctors. About 2 in 3 doctors in this country practicing now are either at or nearing retirement age. And there aren't enough doctors being trained in medical schools to do primary care, to do geriatric care for seniors, to make up for that downfall. So the two things here are happening. You have a number of older doctors who are likely to retire in the next 5 to 10 years who are not going to be replaced by the incoming recruits of new doctors in medical school today. So that's going to create some shortages, number one. Number two, I think there are a lot of doctors, and I hear from them all the time, who are saying they're going to retire early, or they're going to move into some other form of medicine, concierge medicine, you know, VIP medicine, or completely leave the practice because they don't want to stick around for all the changes that are coming. If you're a doctor, for example, let me give you one example. If you're a doctor that provides care for and services Medicare recipients, over the last 10 years, the cost of providing care for a typical Medicare patient in this country has grown by 20%, but the increase in the reimbursements from the federal government for providing that care have only gone up by about 4%. Now, that's a huge gap. Now, you're correct about the lifestyles that some doctors have lived, and you know, it has been something of a gravy train in the past, because doctors have been free to prescribe any tests that they want, to send patients for as many tests as they like, and that every test that a doctor sends a patient for usually results in some benefit to the office in terms of money coming into their office, and that's partly how they earn their business and how they make their money and stay in the profession. But those things are going to change, and I think for many doctors, the combination of nearing retirement age and these new standards that are required under Obamacare, not just for Medicare, but a variety of other changes that are going to affect medical practices, are going to make that field less attractive. So the upshot for consumers is, you may have a problem in certain parts of the country identifying a doctor who will take you, who will treat you, and if you have a particular condition, if you're a senior and you need to see a regular doctor, you may have a problem. And that's one of the larger issues that we really haven't seen addressed in any fashion in either Obamacare or any other pieces of legislation. It troubles me.
And we're going to hit you with two last questions. Tell us about the subsidies. I was reading the other day that a family of 4 or 5 could actually have income of like $80,000 or $90,000 and still become eligible for a subsidy, which really struck me as, wow, You know, you can still have a pretty decent income and tap into these subsidies. How do people find out what they might be eligible for by way of a subsidy? Because, you know, maybe the good news in some cases is, well, look, if I only make $30,000 or $40,000 a year, maybe I'll be substantially subsidized in my insurance requirement. Is there any way where they can go to get an idea of the subsidy they might be eligible for?
Yes, you're correct. Let me just say, first of all, that if you're an individual and you're earning up to about $46,000 a year, you will qualify for a subsidy. If you're a family of four earning about $94,000 a year, you qualify for a subsidy. If you're buying insurance through these affordable health care exchanges, the two things you need to know, one, you must buy it through the affordable health care exchange in your state to get that subsidy, and two, you can't get on the website right now to see what it is.
And, you don't get the subsidy if either you or your spouse have access to insurance through an employer. Is that right?
As long as your employer's insurance meets certain qualifications in terms of the standards, as long as it's good quality health care and it's affordable health care, you can't choose to go online. And, in fact, the truth is, if you have an employer who's giving you good quality, low cost, or affordable cost health care, you're going to have a better deal with the employer than you are through these federal exchanges. But let me just say, for those other individuals, I would recommend not going to the website right now. There are a couple other places you can do, and they will do calculations for you. I'm just going to give you one. Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization, has created a subsidy, an interactive subsidy calculator at kff.org. That's KaiserFamilyFoundation.org. You type in basically your income, how many people are in your family, and answer a couple questions, and it will tell you whether you qualify. So if you're an individual or a family of two earning a certain amount of money, a family of four, a family of six or seven or even eight or higher, it'll tell you what you would qualify for. And the truth is that even though the Obamacare website, they can't get it to work, Kaiser's works like a dream. Every time I've gone in and typed in some numbers just from reporting I'm doing, it comes right up. So that's one. The other thing you can do is you can contact one of your local advocacy groups. One of the places where the federal website is working, healthcare.gov is the federal website for Obamacare. If you type in local help into the search field at healthcare.gov and type in your zip code, it will tell you agencies that are within a couple miles of your home that you can work with, and they are able to pull that information down and tell you, here's what your subsidy qualifications would be, here are the plans you might want to consider. So, you know, You're going around the federal system to find out what the federal program would actually give you in terms of a subsidy. And right now, with all the problems with the website, I'd recommend you go to Kaiser Family Foundation or one of the local advocacy groups for that information.
All right. In our last 1 minute here, I want to ask you about prescription drugs. I've got a weird situation. My doctor says, go to this particular grocery store and your blood pressure medicine will be free. And I said, why? And he says, it's just a promotion. You'll go over there and you'll get it free, and then get your cholesterol medication over at this other grocery store and you can get it for $4. And I'm confused because on the one hand you hear about how prescription drugs are going to be more costly than ever, but then I'm getting one of mine for free and the other for $4. And maybe I'm in an unusual situation, but how will Obamacare affect the cost of prescription drugs for people going forward?
Well, in two ways. The first is that under the health programs that insurers must offer, whether it's through companies or through these affordable health care exchanges, there is a prescription drug benefit requirement. So each plan that you buy will have to have some level of prescription drug coverage, and it will just depend on which plan you choose, whether it's costly or whether it's cheap. But the second point that I would make is that a lot of generic drugs, a lot of people who can do well on generics, and many people can choose the generic as opposed to the brand name drug, even if it's a prescription, can get them free or very, very cheap, as you suggest, for a few bucks, from the raft of new retail clinics that are opening in convenience stores and retail stores and shopping plazas. As promotions, many of those stores are offering these very, very low-cost prescription medicines or generics, and it's worth exploring. The other two things I'll mention, talk to your doctor about free samples. Sometimes they have them, and they'll give them to you, cost you nothing. You can also buy pills that come at a higher level, a 100-milligram pill, and cut it in half with your doctor's consultation, and you're paying half price essentially for the same amount of medicine. So those are three ways you can really cut your drug costs. And as I said, with the rising cost of health insurance and healthcare premiums, I think looking for savings elsewhere in your health plan and elsewhere in your healthcare are going to be really smart things for people to do.
Nick Tate, author of The Obamacare Survival Guide. Thank you so much for joining us, sir. Very, very good information.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. And if you'd like to get a copy of his book, you can do so online. Just Google it. It's at Amazon. It's at all the big bookstores. The Obamacare Survival Guide. Check it out. I've got a copy myself, and I bought it. I didn't get it for free. I bought it myself, and I'm glad I did. It's a fantastic book. Highly recommend it. All right, we're out of time for this week's program. Next week, we'll be talking about some creative ways to finance your small business. We've got a great guest lined up to do that show with us next week. All right, have a fantastic week. This is Jim Paris here, as always, to help you make the most of God's money. We'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit ChristianMoney.com or send an email to jim@ChristianMoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.